Michael Hurst, welcome back to Hudson.
Thank you. I'm actually in Tivoli right now, which is loud.
Oh.
It doesn't sound as good. It's so silly that I'm like 5 miles away from you and we have to use all this technology.
Yeah, it's a little little difficult.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to talk to you again. Michael was here a couple of years ago where you were at the Opera House and you were at Spotty Dog, right?
I love Hudson, yeah. I perform wherever I can in Hudson.
So you're going to be at TSL on Saturday at 2 o'clock?
Correct, yeah. This will be for my newest project, which is Extraordinary People. It's a book called Extraordinary People, and I've also been writing some songs to go with that.
Oh, great.
Similar to the Unusual Creatures project, but this time about some of the planet's most awesome people, according to me.
Now, how did you choose the people that you have in this book?
It was tough. You know, I mean, it seems like it would be somewhat easy to come up with a list of people to write about that I thought were extraordinary, but then I really had to kind of curate in the sense of, okay, I don't want too many white guys. I want to also have some women. I want to have different ethnicities, and so that's where it got tricky, was really trying to compile 50 people that were married and not all the same. And I really just kept a list of people that I thought were interesting on my phone and in the notepad thing on my phone. And the more I would talk to friends and share my list with them, they would say, oh, you should check out this person or this person. And I just did a lot of research. I just kept reading and looking up people and found some really fascinating humans to write about.
Well, the list that I've seen, we know some of the names pretty well, but the others,
sure,
like Sam Patch, who jumped Niagara Falls for $75.
Right.
That
yeah.
was the going rate then, maybe.
Well, that was probably a lot of money then. Yeah, I mean, so my kind of way I always present the book is that it's some of the people are living, some of them are deceased, some are famous, fairly well-known, and some are fairly obscure. Sam Patch is sort of a little blip in American history. He was kind of America's first daredevil. And like you said, he went around jumping waterfalls. He would build sort of a stilted ledge next to the waterfall and jump in and promote it through the town, and people would come to see him do this, and then places like Niagara caught wind of it and said, hey, we'll pay you to jump in ours. And it's kind of a fascinating story, and I won't give the whole thing away. It'll require people to come to the event to hear what finally happened to Sam Patch.
Right. Well, we know about Evel Knievel.
Sure, he's a more contemporary daredevil, although not that contemporary anymore. His son, Robbie, might be the real modern daredevil.
It says here he jumped his motorcycle over 14 Greyhound buses.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm giving away my age. I'm in my 40s, but when I grew up, Evel Knievel was a big deal, and I feel like people today, younger kids, don't necessarily know who he was. And it was such a fascinating time in America, you know, that everyone would gather around their TVs to one of the three channels and sit around and wait for this guy to jump 14 Greyhound buses on his motorcycle. And this thing was televised to millions of people, and he would, you know, start at the top of this ramp in this Coliseum and kind of work his way down and then pretend he was going to be up, but not quite, and back up, and everyone was holding their breath. And 75% of the time he'd fall and break bones, you know.
Oh, dear.
But that was awesome. That was exciting TV of the 70s.
Well, they're not all daredevils, though, the people that you've listed.
No. Yeah, who else were you looking at in that?
Well, I'm looking at a list. It says Evel Knievel, the Iceman, the most well-preserved human found in the ice after 5,300 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen Thayer, who walked to the North Pole alone. And Roy Sullivan, who was struck by lightning 7 times.
Yeah, so some of these people, obviously there's the daredevils we just talked about. There are more. Then there's people who are explorers. There are scientists. You know, it kind of is all over the place. for what makes someone extraordinary. Humanitarians, you know, Helen Thayer, yeah, she was just someone I had never heard about. She was this former Olympian who decided to walk to the North Pole with her dog. And she's done all these incredible hikes, and she's still around. I've been emailing with her, and really fascinating woman. Who else did you mention before that? There was someone else that was good.
Roy Sullivan.
Oh, Roy Sullivan, yeah. I mean, he's, you know, extraordinary just in the sense that the guy was struck by lightning 7 times and lived to tell about it.
Like a cat with 9 lives.
Right, and in fact, his wife was struck once. I mean, you can imagine the impact that it had on him to feel like he was under the wrath of the gods, you know, and even his wife, like, stay clear.
But he didn't set out to get struck by lightning like the daredevils might.
Oh, no, not at all. He was a forest ranger in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, which probably right there increases odds just because he's outdoors a lot. And it turns out Virginia has a higher rate of lightning strikes than a lot of the rest of the country. But yeah, he just randomly was struck 7 times. I think the odds of getting struck by lightning 1 time is like 1 in 10,000. So The odds of getting struck by lightning 7 times is 10,000 times 10,000 times 10,000 times 10,000 times 10,000. I mean, it's a ridiculous number.
Well, I don't know what age group you're aiming this book at, but you're going to have to put a caveat about don't try this at home, aren't you?
Well, yeah, and those with the book, we put a little stamp on some of the pages that was exactly that. Do not try this at home. And, you know, it's like all my projects, Ellen, I think, you've seen some of these other things. It's like I write what I'm, or work on, create music, whatever it, that fascinates me. And honestly, like, whoever is interested in listening to it or coming, learning about it, that's great. I could care less if it's, you know, a 2-year-old kid or a 120-year-old woman who probably would be in my book. You know, it's like, that's awesome. The book was, in fact, released by Chronicle Kids, so it's sort of marketed toward the kid world, but I imagine it holds up on a coffee table with adults who like weird, interesting stories. So, I mean, whatever works for me.
Well, you know, we used your music for The Unusual Creatures as our theme song for a while.
I love that. That was so awesome.
And
that's
I just love the blue-footed booby. But
you can't say that on radio.
No, I guess not. I take it back. But also, Michael has written songs for ice cream trucks. And
right.
But I can't imagine what your songs for extraordinary people are going to be like.
Well, they're much simpler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of my music can be very sort of eclectic and all over the place. I thought for this project, I would try to write just some simple songs that I'm actually singing, songs in the traditional sense.
There was a young man from Kentucky, or...
Exactly, not necessarily in limerick form, but yeah, I mean, they're simple. A lot of these songs are just, you know, 1-4-5 basic guitar progressions. I was going for sort of the simpler, more about the lyrics and less about the music with this. So, yeah, they're fun. And, you know, I do have some guest singers coming into the studio. We're still working on the album now, so the songs that I'm playing at the event on Saturday are going to be a sneak peek at what will eventually be the Songs for Extraordinary People album.
There you go, folks. If you want to get...
Only for you, Hudson.
So, I was thinking today about Moondog. Did you ever hear of Moondog?
Of course, and you know what? That's a funny story. My office mate is working on a Moondog documentary right now as we
speak.
Really?
Yeah. Really?
I watched a cut of it out of the corner of my eye. But yeah, sorry, what were you going to say about Moondog?
I found my Moondog record. Tom can't be with us because he's running for office, so he can't be on the radio during that period.
Him. I'll vote for him.
What was I going to say about Moondog? Oh, and he's been kidding me for a long time about my Moondog record because he knew that I had one, a recording, and WGXC has, as a fundraiser, a record fair each year, and so he's trying to persuade me to give the contribute the Moondog recording. I'm not giving up my Moondog recording. And so I learned a lot more about Moondog. I mean, he used to be on the corner of 53rd and 6th Avenue when I lived in New York. And
So did you ever talk to him?
I think I once attempted to. I'm not quite sure, but he used to recite poems, and he played these instruments that he made. And if you go on Wikipedia or one of those sites, you can, I think you can see pictures of some of his instruments. They were like...
Or a picture of him. What was he known as? The Viking of 57th?
Yeah.
He looks like an old Viking with his long gray hair. He's blind.
Well, and he's blind, and he... Yeah. He wore these long robes, and at first people thought he was a priest. So then he started wearing moose antlers on his head.
Right.
So he had this very fanciful costume. He looked like a Viking.
Well, that was his nickname. Yeah, no. He's quite a... he should have been in the book, in fact.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, but...
Might have to do a follow-up book with more people. This is a problem with unusual creatures, too. It's like, now I'm constantly learning about more animals and... And I'm getting ice cream trucks are like, when are you going to do volume two? And, you know, I need more hours in the day.
Well, yes, we all need more hours in the day, that's for sure. Well, what's going to be next after Extraordinary People?
Oh,
the
man.
Second volume?
you know, like I want to be pretentious and say I'm keeping that under my hat. But the fact is I don't actually have anything planned right now. I'm working on putting together a album of some of my soundtrack music. I want to release just sort of like a music for films and TV volume one. Some of the music is just really fun and beyond the film, you know, it hasn't really done much. And it's like, why not put this out and make it something that filmmakers can access and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's kind of, I've been playing with that. And I do have another book that will be out in another, I guess in 2 years, which is Curious Constructions, 50 of the Planet's Most Fascinating Structures.
Wow.
So I'm busy.
So you have to travel a lot to find these extraordinary structures.
I have to travel all the way to my computer and Google them.
Ah.
That's a beginning.
Whenever
I can, I try to go find these things. You know, some of them are very far away, and unfortunately my budget does not allow me to go to places like Jordan to, you know, there's many places I'd love to go to that wouldn't that be awesome?
It would be.
Try to get a network or something to pay for me to travel and check out these things. You want to come with me?
Sure.
You can
I'm
be
there.
The radio documentarian. Let's do this.
Great. Okay.
Let's make it happen.
So Susan's been sitting here quietly, and I'm wondering, I think maybe she has a question or two. Is that possible?
Bring it on.
No, I'm Susan Simon, and I talk about food once a month on this Thursday afternoon program.
I love food. I did a food project, too.
I know you did a food project, and from time to time, Tom plays one of your ice cream truck songs when I'm here, which is, you know, wonderful. I'm just very curious about, is there something more deeper about your attachment to food other than just liking to eat?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, that's first and foremost. But are you aware of the One Ring Zero album that we did, the recipe project?
I read about it. I'm not. I have to become more aware of it.
Okay, so I have a band called One Ring Zero, and we do all these, because I don't have enough projects under my own name, I do projects under my band name, too. And for that particular project, we asked 10 different chefs that we love to contribute recipes, which we then set to the music of their choice stylistically.
That's fantastic.
Sing the recipes word for word, which was insanely hard to do. You know, people like Mario Batali and Tom Colicchio, David Chang.
Fantastic.
And my connection with that partially was just, I was fascinated at the time with how all these chefs are bigger rock stars than rock stars. You know, it was like...
Oh, yes.
And it's still kind of the case, but even like, you know, 10 years ago when we first started on that project, it was like, what's going on here? I mean, the Food Network is like MTV, you know, and these dudes are huge. And I thought, all right, let's make them rock stars. Let's take music and set it, you know, take their recipes. And just to even add more fun to it, my brother-in-law is one of these celebrity chef rock stars. He lives in San Francisco. He's Chris Cosentino, who won Top Chef, I guess, last year, and he's been on Iron Chef several times. So,
does he have a restaurant in San Francisco?
He does. It's called Cox's Cut. This is a new restaurant. It used to be Encanto.
Uh-huh.
And he and my sister, they also have a meat curing company, and they are huge into the food world. And so they were extremely helpful. I mean, Chris was able to put me in touch with David Chang and Colicchio and all these people, and that helped significantly. But yeah, it really was just kind of like, what a weird thing we're in right now. But also, I love to cook. I love to eat, and I love music.
Just out of curiosity, for example, what did David Chang? What was his style? What did he ask you? How did you set his recipe to music?
David Chang said, "Okay, here's a few recipes. Pick which one you want to do." I landed on Maine Jonah crab claws with a yuzu mayonnaise dressing, and I thought this would be a fun one to do. And I asked him what style music he liked, and he said he really liked Pavement, the band Pavement, and he liked indie rock in general. He said he liked everything on the Merge record label.
It's pretty loud in his restaurants. Have you been to them?
Oh, I have, yeah.
pretty loud.
And so that was kind of a no-brainer for me just because I have a lot of friends. I'm from Virginia, which is close to North Carolina, and I know a lot of the Merge people. And in fact, the Magnetic Fields are good friends of mine. I think we talked this last time, Stephen, living up in Hudson. And so I actually had Claudia from the Magnetic Fields sing his main Jonah crab claw recipe. So he got his indie Merge.
Can we get this recording through your website?
I think you can probably. Yeah, it's probably not on michaelhurst.com, but it's probably on onewingzero.com. Of course, iTunes.
And what is the album called?
It's called The Recipe Project. Very clever name.
Oh, that's very cool. I mean, did Mario Batali ask you to do like something to a tarantella or an
exactly.
opera?
Exactly. How'd you know?
I just guessed.
That's a brilliant guess. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I was afraid he was going to ask us to do something to an REM sounding something because he's REM obsessed. But,
no, I thought he was going to do a Verdi or Puccini or tarantella, you know, an Italian folk song.
Yeah, no, we did an Italian folk song. I mean, it kind of turns into Pink Floyd halfway through or something, but. But it opens and closes with, you know, doom da doom da doom da doom da doom, you know.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Michael, you just have too much fun.
I am going to become your fan now at my old age.
You know, I need fans. I think my stuff is so, like, out there sometimes that it kind of just isn't even on the radar with most people, which I'm okay with. As long as I'm having fun, you know, and can pay my rent, I'm good.
No, Michael, it's on Saturday, are you going to be playing music as well as talking about your book?
Yes. I mean, I'm just going to do two or three very short songs with an acoustic guitar. I didn't bring my theremin with me or anything that exciting, but it's going to be an awesome presentation with slides and videos of some, you know, I think I have a video of Lawn Chair Larry who tied 42 helium balloons to a launcher and flew over L.A., you know, and I have songs about some of these people, so it'll be fun, all ages, and there will be cookies, chocolate chip cookies there.
Wow.
Because, you know why? Because I included Ruth Wakefield in the book, who was the inventor of the Toll House cookie.
Oh, gosh.
There's
perfect.
A connection. The food connection is there.
Love it.
Well, we're looking for the blue-footed booby here to take us out. If we can't find him or her, I think of them all as he somehow.
Well, the whole reason they do their dance is so that the male can attract the female. But it's typically the male doing the dance.
Okay, the elephant shrew. The elephant shrew is good, too.
That works, yeah. Is that going to be the outro music?
I think so. We're trying.
I love this station.
Here we go.
Oh,
sorry.
unusual adventures, Earth's strangest animals, and the music they inspire.
Nice.
The elephant shrew.
You brought up a video. You brought up
the elephant
PDF
shrew is
episode.
Not an elephant.
Oh, we have.
It's
we
not
have
a shrew. The... What is it?
No, it's you have to go to law. The website.
You brought up an entire PBS episode on YouTube.
It's under...
Which makes for an interesting radio broadcast.
Michael and the band. Maybe it's there. Anyway. Well, we do our best.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me. I'll see you on Saturday, I hope.
I hope so, and good luck with it. I know you're going to have fun.
I always do, and I'm happy to always talk to you anytime and hope to catch up soon.
Yes, thanks so much for bearing up with our trials and tribulations here.
I'm totally fine.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Michael.
Hope to see you all. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.